On this edition of the Cubs Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide, Tim Stebbins, Gordon Wittenmeyer, and I get into a little bit about Dusty Baker, who dropped the Steve Bartman reference after his Game 2 win in the World Series. We spend some time on the impending labor negotiations and what that might look like for Major League Baseball.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
At Wintrust, we know true fans show their team pride every chance they get. With Cubs checking, you'll score a Cubs debit card so you can show your support every time you pay. Open today at Wintrust.com/CubsTalk. $100 required to open. Member FDIC.
Let's play two.
Back! Run! Run!
Way back! It might be! It could be!
To the Cubs Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide and that really sweet Cubs WATM card with Tim Stebbins, Gordon Wittenmeyer, Tony Gill. I'm David Kaplan. Gentlemen, a lot to discuss. We'll get to the labor stuff in a moment. It's funny, Dusty Baker and the Astros even the World Series last night at a game apiece. Now they had for three in Atlanta. People were calling in on the radio today, still mad that Dusty didn't go out and calm Mark Pryor down in Game 6 of 2003, that he brought up the Bartman game yesterday when he was asked about his most talented teams. All he said was, my other teams were really good. This is the most talented team I've ever had, but something always seemed to go wrong in the wrong direction. Something would happen. This team, when something happens, they take it and make a positive out of it. He goes, there was the Bartman game. There was the Javi Baez bat hitting somebody when he broke his bat against Wall. And, oh, my goodness, the name Dusty Baker triggers Cub fans like nothing I've seen, Gordon.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I just wrote a column about him and posted it, I think, during Game 2. Again, I referenced that, you know, that this guy is one of the most successful managers in history. He's done this job better than almost anybody in history. And yet, from the outside, and people in the game recognize that, right? People in the game respect and love him. People outside the game, he's a polarizing guy. He gets criticized everywhere he's gone, even though everywhere he's gone, he's won. And this is a perfect example of that, right? I mean, you've talked to Mark Pryor on and off the record about it, and he defends Dusty in those decisions. And Kerry Wood has always been one of his strongest defenders. And these are the guys that are held up as Exhibit A and B in how he mishandled or did something wrong in Chicago. And it's just, I don't know. I think it's just become this narrative that becomes a low-hanging fruit for people over the years.
Where do you sit on this? You're the youngest member. And by the way, how old were you when the Bartman play happened?
Yeah, I was six. Honestly, I don't even remember watching that game. It was that long ago. I know my dad went to Game 7. I was just showing Gordon before this. I have a hat from that game somewhere still. But where do I stand? I think we talked about it on Tuesday. Like, Dusty, I don't know how you can root against him. And I will say that if people bring up, you know, that series in relation to him and the Bartman thing and maybe how Dusty's associated. Like, the thing is there was one out in that inning. The Cubs were up, what was it, like the 3-0 in that inning? 3-1? They had a lead for sure.
3-0. 3-0.
Right. So they had an out. I think that at bat led to putting a second man on base, and then it unraveled from there. So whether Dusty should have gone out to call Mark Pryor's what some people, I believe you were saying, are saying. Like, I don't think that's the thought. I think, and this was obviously a different era, especially compared to starting pitchers now, but prior through 120 pitches, like, I think there was maybe a case that once a couple of guys reach pitch count or not, and maybe it's just how managers, you know, handle bullpens and rotations back then, but once a couple guys get on, you have the lead, maybe you go to some of your late inning horses. I don't think you need to go calm prior down after a foul ball that wasn't called interference. I think once guys start getting on, you send somebody out and maybe you just take him out at that point to get a fresh arm.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, and there was what about Alex Gonzalez? Go ahead, Gordon. I mean, there was a double play that wasn't turned too. So it wasn't like he like completely unraveled in terms of not being effective. Definitely maybe after the error, after a couple of guys on. To your point, Tim, you know, there's definitely room in there to criticize and suggest maybe there was another way to go at some point, but not right away, not immediately.
So here's one thing. I asked Matt Clement, this has got to be 10 years ago, because the difference between the two teams, who did Jack McKean go to? Jack McKean in game 7, he started, I think it was Mark Redman, and then he handed the ball on very short rest to Josh Beckett. He was willing to use starters as relievers. And I said to Matt Clement, because the Cubs had Mark Guthrie and Dave Veers, like they weren't blessed with amazing, amazing bullpen arms. I said, hey, man, how come you guys didn't pitch out of the bullpen? And he said, I'm just not a bullpen guy. I told Dusty, I'm probably not real comfortable coming out of the bullpen. Well, that's the difference. You had starters on Chicago they could not go to, and you had starters on Florida who came in relief and won the series for him and ultimately the World Series. Is that a fair characterization, Gordon?
Yeah, and by the way, Josh Beckett didn't just pitch it in relief. I mean, he was held out as one of those weapons that we've seen. You know, we saw a couple of years later Randy Johnson coming out of the bullpen. We saw more recently Madison Bumgarner come out and pitch a lot of – I mean, when you get to this point in the postseason, you've seen more of this. Josh Beckett pitched 4 innings in that game, in that game 7 that you're talking about. So that wasn't just coming in and pitching out of the pen. Brad Penny pitched an inning prior to that.
Yep.
So McKeon was like all hands on deck, let's go. But he had – I mean, Beckett was a really, really young pitcher at the time, a young power pitcher who probably had, you know, a lot of bullets in that arm at that point. And so, yeah, if you got a guy that's comfortable doing it or a young guy that doesn't know any better, go ahead and do it. If you've got a guy that knows enough about himself that he's not comfortable, then you don't use him. It's pretty simple.
So here's a great story that I don't think I've ever told on the podcast. So one of the Fox broadcasters I'm talking to about that game, he said after game 6, they go to an MLB party at the Lodge. I don't know if Tim's been there. Gordon, I know you and I have been there.
Yeah,
the Lodge is a famous bar. It's closed to the public because it's rented out by Major League Baseball. He said, I walk in there. I just got done working on the crew that did game 6. I walk in. I look at the bar. There's Josh Beckett. I'm like, oh, my game tomorrow? So he said, I stand there for a few minutes. I watch. He said, I watch him down 1 beer. I keep standing, 2 beers. I keep standing there talking to my friends. He said, he's 4 or 5 beers in. And they got a game the next day. And he said, I walked up to him because I knew him a little bit. I said, hey, Josh, far be it for me to tell you how to live your life. But Jack McKeon just told us that you're available to pitch tomorrow night relief if needed. Dude, how many beers have you had? He goes, I've had a lot. And let me tell you what's going to happen tomorrow night. They're going to get to Redmond early. I'm going to come in. I'm going to pitch at least 4 innings. I'm going to give up 1 run, and we're going to the effing World Series. Mark it down. He pitched 4 innings. He gave up a solo home run to Moises Alou, and that was the only run he gave up, and they went to the effing World Series. True story.
And to your point, Mark Redman, 3 innings, 5 hits, 5 runs, 2 home runs. And I think Kerry Wood, he gave up a home run to Kerry Wood of all people. I know Kerry Wood could kind of swing it a little bit, but they did get to him so much that even the pitcher got to him to what he was forecasting.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it wasn't about what the Marlins pitching did, because Cubs scored 6 runs in that game. That's enough to win, especially when you're starting Kerry Wood. It was the Marlins getting to the Cubs pitching, especially after the fourth inning.
All right, so let's move from that, because Dusty was in the news.
Oh, by the way, I misspoke earlier. I meant that Randy Johnson, we had already seen Randy Johnson do it 2 years earlier by the time Jack McKeon used Beckett.
All right, let's get into the labor strife that could be in the operative word, be on the horizon. December 1 is when the deadline is. That's when the expiration, I should say, of the collective bargaining agreement is. Do you, Gordon, believe there's going to be a delay in spring training? Heaven forbid a delay in the season, or cooler heads will prevail and they will be right back to work by February?
I don't have a lot of faith that they're gonna meet this December 1st deadline. But that doesn't mean that we won't start on time in spring training. I got to believe that's going to happen. I got to believe that's the highest priority for both sides. So I could see them kicking the can down the road a little bit, resetting the deadline at some point if they think they're close. I also, in my mind, as much as I don't trust the powers that be in baseball to get this right and to avoid a mess, two things keep going through my mind. One is, I talked to Jerry Reinsdorf earlier this month, and he keeps echoing in my mind. He said, these things often take a deadline. So it might seem dire weeks and months out, but a lot of the progress gets made up as you approach that deadline. So maybe sometime in December, if there's progress, that's when we start to hear about it. And then the other thing is, talking to an agent during the season, he pointed out this is when they shut down in 94, 95, it was a $1 billion industry, which meant that you shut down for 3 months, you're talking about $300-something million, which is plenty. But now it's more than 10 times that. The industry is worth more than 10 times that. You shut down and every month plus, you're talking about $1 billion being lost to the industry after a pandemic. Actually, we're still kind of in the pandemic and having economic effects that continue to ripple on forward. And so I just think that they gotta understand on both sides just how much is at stake, especially at this critical crossroads of sort of national popularity for this game. It's a tough game to watch. 4-hour games routinely. It's a slow pace of game. They're making more money, but popularity, it's not because of the popularity game. That's gone down relatively. And so they better get this right, and they better not be. I think they understand that. They better not delay spring training.
Tim, you're in a different demographic. Gordon's in the elderly demographic. I'm in the middle-aged demographic.
You're young and spry,
Tim. What do you think? I mean, I know this is your job and you cover baseball, but Tim Anderson said, baseball's boring. We need to juice it up. We got to make it fun again. What is your 25-year-old take?
On baseball being fun or not, or the labor stuff?
Everything as it relates to labor, the way the game's played. Like, you tell fans, hey, man, we got labor strife. And they're like, well, your sport's boring anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a very hard comparison to make, but I found myself during the White Sox playoff run this year looking at Baseball Reference 2005 World Series. And you look at those game times, and none more than 3 hours and a couple of minutes, a lot of them 2:30 or so. And there's games this World Series that are going like 4 hours, right? And I think that's terrible, honestly. I think that's hard to get people invested when it's such a slow burn, and you're taking 4 hours to get to like the climactic point of the game when it's supposed to be the highest stakes. I think that's definitely an issue. I don't know if that's something that, maybe it is with CBA, like the rules changes, right? That's something they solve, but that's definitely something that stands out to me. And I don't think the season next year will be impacted the way it was in 95 when the start of the season was delayed because of the strike and lockout from 94. But I don't know if when that CBA expires at the start of December, there's going to be an agreement. And that might mean they announce the two sides that they push the deadline down the road. That might mean there's an actual work stoppage. And whether that's a lockout, I don't know if there's even, it's like the rebuild retool, right? I don't know if there's a difference in those two things. But I think they get to an agreement before spring training where it's not impacted, whether that's late December or January. I think that, like Gordon laid out, there's just too much at stake, too much to lose. And you'll see them maybe for a month, there's a freeze in free agency because of that. And then there'll be a flurry of action and then spring training will be there and it'll be, I anticipate being busy, but I wouldn't put it past at the same time that there could be a chance that the schedule is impacted somehow, but I got to think that they won't get to that point.
Okay. It's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Gordon, what is the number one, number two issue on the players' wish list, the agents, and what is number one, number two on the owners' wish list?
It's basically the same issue. The owners, as they always have in labor talks, want to protect themselves from themselves. So they want mechanisms in place that are going to somehow cap spending per team. Even though the game continues to make more money, teams continue to rise individually in value across the board, and profits are made where you couldn't always say that. 30 years ago, you might not be able to say that every team actually was in the black. Every team's not only in the black now, they're in the black by a lot. And this is pandemic economics aside. You know, I'm not going to suggest the pandemic economic reality isn't a real thing. But just all else being equal, the game makes a lot of money, and every team is making money. But the same owners still spend, and the same owners don't. And so the ones that spend a lot piss off the ones that don't, and they want mechanisms to bring it down. Players have seen the gains that the owners have made in the last two CBAs and have seen salaries suppressed. Salaries went down a couple of years ago for the first time ever. And they've been essentially flat as revenues have risen quite a bit in the game. That's not equitable. Players have finally opened their eyes to that because they've seen the very real effects on slow free agent markets five of the last 6 years. So that's on their side. They want those luxury taxes either eliminated in a best case scenario for them or somehow attached to a revenue formula that instead of revenues in a game going up 10% and the luxury tax goes up 1%, the luxury tax gets more tied to the revenues.
What about, Tim, Gordon, what about the suppression of service time? Because I've found covering an NFL lockout, an NBA lockout, an NHL lockout, covered them all, and Major League Baseball, that yes, they want to champion the young player. We can't have the young player get taken advantage of. And that issue gets thrown into the woods. Yeah, we'll deal with that down the road. Let's kick that to the side. We're going to take care of the guys right now, even though they talk a good game when Chris Bryant or whoever has their service time artificially suppressed.
Yeah, but how do you fix it, Cap? I mean, what formula do you use? If you move the calendar date, then they just change their behavior according to where it falls on the calendar. There's, I don't know. I've been down the road with a lot of people in the game on this. Like, how would you fix it? And every fix opens up another avenue to game the system. So you almost have to eliminate the system somehow altogether. And I don't know how you do that. You've the 0 to 3 and then the 3 years of arbitration and then you become a free agent. There's
I've got a simple fix.
What's
you
that?
Allow the trading of draft picks so that if you are going to pick Chris Bryant number 2 and you're not prepared to get him to big leagues as fast as possible, guess what? Hey, guess what, Jed? It's Brian Cashman. I'll give you my number 1 this year and my number 1 next year, and I'll throw in that reliever. I want the kid because he's playing for me in 3 months. Period.
Cap.
Bryant with Scott Boras go, we're not signing with the Cubs.
Well, hold up, Cap.
We're not playing.
The same issue still exists. You haven't solved the essential issue. All you've done is create an example that involves a team that's willing to play in. Most teams aren't. It's very rare when you have the guy who's the slam dunk potential MVP that you don't game his service time. Jason Hayward was an exception. The Braves didn't do it. But the Yankees have done it. Almost every team does it. So you're still going to wind up with the same problem. You just might have an avenue for somebody to come in. I don't think that's going to drive trades as much as you think it is. If you did allow them to trade draft picks, I think that's a whole nother thing.
It would certainly help interest in the sport.
Some people have said, take the service time out of it, make it an age thing. But then now that would be interesting to watch what the fallout is of that, because that might put a higher premium all of a sudden on drafting high school kids who are sometimes, 3 and 4 years younger than the college kids you draft. The college kids are the higher, the lower risk in a higher percentage of success. So now do you gamble more to get more control of your player? Or do you run the risk of having to pay your player quicker by taking a lower risk guy? That could be fascinating to watch. I think the biggest fundamental change that the sides could come to an agreement on, that I don't think Major League Baseball will do, or at least they'll wait until they have to, get rid of the hard caps on amateur spending. If you did that, you would decrease by a lot the incentives to tank, because one of the biggest reasons teams tank is to be able to acquire young players and to be able to acquire better and more young players. And if you're a good team, if you spend a lot and you're constantly 80 plus 90 plus wins, you draft lower and your signing allotment for draft picks and internationals are lower. So if you got rid of those caps, now you're the team that spends money on big league talent. You try to win every year. And I have as much to spend on amateurs as I want to. So I can overspend in the draft. I can overspend in internationals. I can keep backfilling my farm system. And I can maintain a competitive product without rebuilding.
Tim, that's an interesting perspective he brings there. That I want to go back to trading draft picks. I think it helps interest in the sport that if the Cubs – said, we need a number one starter. Oh, God. The number one pick in the draft is who? Okay, we'll give you 3 number ones. We want that kid. That would be really cool. Gordon's other proposal is very interesting as well.
I think trading draft picks is interesting. I think it's different because if you're a team acquiring, like, let's say, like 2013, the Yankees went Chris Bryant for whatever package. It's different than, say, we're going to give up, I'm trying to think, like, whatever, and like an NFL example, like if you're trading something, you're trading first round picks and getting something, you get more of a bang for your buck right away. You get more of an immediate impact. And baseball is different. Developmental timelines are longer. One thing I wonder, I don't know how they could implement this because of that age thing, but my premise is restricted free agency. And in other sports like the NBA, you get 4 years. The team has a certain deadline in October in the beginning of the fourth year of your rookie contract to agree to an extension with you. Otherwise, you cannot negotiate until the ensuing summer. So you talk about the game's getting younger in any case. We see guys like Tatis and Vladdy Jr., young 20s becoming MVP candidates, right? So if you go back to the Bryan example, it's not really a good example because his fourth season was one that he missed 60 games. He had a shoulder injury, not seeing his production. That's not who he was, obviously, but he goes to the market after that year. What does that look like for him, right? And I think restricted free agency, maybe that doesn't fix service time and service time manipulation, but on the one hand, if you're a team, you're not going to mess around with that because you want to get the best years out of them as possible. And if Chris Bryant's hitting 400 in spring training, maybe you want to get him up right away because you know the clock is ticking as is. The service time thing is, I don't know if that would eliminate that issue, but let these guys at least go to the open market. Zach LaVine, he had to go get an offer sheet from Sacramento, and it was like 4 and 80 something, and he's outplayed that contract. But, you know, I know it's different sports, but imagine if Zach LaVine wasn't going to the open market until like now, this coming summer. But I think restricted free agency, you let guys at least go out there and you know, they'll get paid what they're worth. If you're someone who's kind of a slow developer after 4 years, that's, you're going to get a reasonable deal. But if you're someone who's, if you even throw out 2018 for Chris Bryant, he was an all-star 15, maybe all three of those years, MVP in 16, MVP voting in 17. I'd be curious to see what you would get after 4 years for a production like that.
I got an idea that could put it in something. It's not exactly what you're saying, Tim. In fact, it's quite a bit different. But you've got, in arbitration, you've got super two players, right? Mm-hmm. So these are the guys that, you know, after 3 years of service time, you're eligible for arbitration. But again, because of service time issues, some guys were essentially not getting arbitration until closer to 4 years. So they came up with a super two where it's a percentage. So it falls about the same time every year. But basically, if you've got more than two and a half years having been in the majors, and you can qualify for arbitration before you actually have 3 years in, and it's based on whatever the averages are for those years. You could have super fives. If you had super fives for free agency, you'd have to set the threshold higher. So like the top 10% of the players between 5 years and 6 years of service time at the end of a certain season, the top 10%, which, you know, would be, I don't know how many players that would be every year. But it would be the guys that got manipulated. It would be the guys now that get manipulated. You'd make it the top 5%, whatever it is. Those guys become free agents. Now you can't so faithfully just manipulate by 11 days or 17 days or whatever it is, a guy's service time at the front end, and expect to keep him an extra year. You're going to be subject to that super five status. You might as well open the season with him.
Well, I would hope that Scott Boras, who I think is going to carry a lot of sway on the player side, and whoever is going to carry the ball, Rob Manfred, and whatever owners are going to be at the top of the food chain in these discussions, don't take the fans for granted, and we see a labor stoppage going into March and April, because they will kill the sport. That's where they're at this time.
I think this is on MLB more than it is the players. The players have a righteous bitch, and it based on the gains that the owners have made the last two CBAs, if the owners are willing to just sort of give back a little bit of the equity in the game, I'm not talking about throw the scales in the favor of the team. I'm just saying, like, just give back a little closer to equal scales in terms of who's getting what in the revenue. If they give back something that feels of substance, I think they can get something done. I think the players would be open-minded to it. But if they are going to expect the players to give more, then I think they're in for a really stupid and long fight.
All right, guys. Tim, are you still sticking with who did you pick? Gordon and I went 5 games Astros. I don't know if that's going to work out well for us, but who are you still picking?
Yeah, so I had Atlanta in 6, and right when I say that, I know they won game one, but maybe I jinxed him because Charlie Morton breaks his fibula on a 100-mile-an-hour line drive off his leg. And then Max Fried, after being a sub two ERA in the second half, is like a 10 ERA his last two starts in the playoffs. So all of a sudden, this advantage that Atlanta had with the starting pitching is seemingly not there. So I'm sticking with it, but it's an even series now, man. Anything can happen. It's going back to Atlanta, so maybe that's something in their favor.
Gordon?
Yeah, I mean, I had Astros in five, and after game one, I'm like, oh shit. But after game two, I'm cool with it. I still like it. You know, by the way, I just want to go back to the labor issue and the CBA, because I think as it relates to, I think the Cubs are kind of like this perfect example of a team that's going to be impacted sort of by the timeline. And I think that's part of what Jed Hoyer is anticipating. I think he set up his offseason to be an entirely post-CBA offseason. And with the way it looks right now, I mean, a lot of teams might get stuck with that anyway. But I think his plan, whether you like it or hate it, and I don't love it, is that even as a big market team, he's going to wait out the market anyway and look for sort of value and maybe shorter term contracts. And if as Tim says, and I think he's right, that there's sort of this frenzy of activity on the backside of whatever we come up with for a CBA in between that and spring training, then the Cubs could be like right in the middle of that feeding frenzy. And it could be wild. It could be one of, honestly, and again, like it or love it, it could be one of the most entertaining free agencies to watch for the Cubs in years, maybe decades.
Guys, have a great rest of your day. Look forward to talking with you again. We'll see how this World Series shakes out. Tim, have a good one, man. Gordon, for Tony and for everybody here on Cubs Talk, I'm David Kaplan. We'll talk to you next time on the Cubs Talk podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking, with free ATMs nationwide.